It's September the 7th. This is Meet the Movie Press. On the show this week, we pay tribute to the legend Burt Reynolds. And the loser is the popular film Oscar, Bond and Die Hard, because it wouldn't be a week without talking about those guys. Plus the box office and the week's big releases. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
This is Meet the Movie Press. It is September the 7th. I am your host, Simon Thompson. You can find me on Instagram at ShowbizSimon and Twitter as well. There's also a Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson, and my work is fundamentally everywhere. Got a great piece that went up on Forbes yesterday with the director of The Nun, which we're going to be talking about later on the show. With me, as usual, is Dimitri, and we have another special guest host this week. So first of all, hello, sir. Who are you? And welcome to the show.
I am Joe Deckelmeyer. I'm one of the co-owners of that hashtag show, and I'm at ScreenRant.com. We're the Hat Brothers.
Nice. We are.
Always at the junkets. But yeah, that's what I do. I write, and then I interview actors. It's
now,
my life.
I've been trying to get you on this show for, like, how long now?
About a month.
Yeah.
It was, like, around Comic-Con.
Yeah.
This is kind of crazy.
And we'd often see each other at junkets and be like, dude, I've got to get you on the show.
Wait a second.
But
when you say, I've been trying to get you on this show for how long, I'm thinking, like, a year.
Well, we've been talking about it for a while.
We've been talking about it for a while.
About a month.
An actual date.
4 weeks.
Actual date. Hey, it's you know what? A month in Hollywood is a marriage. That is a long time.
Or in the case of the Joker movie, it's Alec Baldwin leaving and coming and leaving again.
Absolutely. Or about the same amount of time that they put into the script of an Adam Sandler film these days. Which I think is great. There you go.
Well, so glad you got to join us today.
Dimitri, welcome back.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't write it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
Where can we find you?
Right here on Meet the Movie Press on Popcorn Talk Network. Also, we do this great little movie show. It's a big movie show called Anatomy of a Movie, which is on after this show, not too long after this show. And we break down movies and all of its parts. And today, we're doing Searching.
You guys were talking a lot about that. I still haven't seen it. I was talking to one of my neighbors the other day, and he was like, oh, Searching, blah, 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 have you seen it? I said, no, but I really want it. He went, I edited that.
Oh, wow.
Did a really good job.
It was awkward. I said, well done. I said, I'll tell you well done again when I've seen it. Congratulations on having one of the most talked about movies of the year.
I can highly recommend it, and tune into Anatomy of a Movie, because we'll break it down, and I really think it's one of the best original mysteries that we've had in quite some time.
Living a Dateline episode. Yeah.
Seriously, I've heard nothing but amazing things about Searching. I just really need to take some time out and watch it. Very big day today. We have someone who is a long-time listener of the show, likes to watch it every week, listen to it every week, and is the first time they've actually been able to take part in the chat today.
Great!
So a massive welcome to Hallbirder84.
Hey there!
Been listening to the show for years now, first time listening live and in the chat. Love the show, keep up the excellent work. Thank you so much indeed. We really appreciate it. And if you like the show, as you tend to, because you tend to turn up every week, everybody, which we really appreciate, do make sure to spread the word about the show. We now have a Twitter, at @MeetMoviePress. Also, people can watch it again on YouTube, you can listen to it on iTunes and various other podcast platforms. But if you enjoy it, other people probably will too, or hopefully will. So please do spread the word, like, subscribe, and tell anybody that will listen. Okay, let's talk about the big news this week. Very sad news yesterday. The death of Burt Reynolds, who was 82. When I was actually, I heard this news yesterday, I was actually on the back lot at Universal. I was checking out some of the houses for Halloween Horror Nights and talking to our favourite person on the show, Jason Blum. That piece is going up on Forbes next week. But I was literally feet away from the house that was used in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Oh, wow.
So it was bittersweet. And I had the chance to interview him just a couple of months ago for the last Movie Star. And very old, very frail. But even though he was quite, I use the phrase decrepit, not in a derogatory way, but really he was very, very physically old. But the glint in his eye and his soft voice was absolutely incredible. The Burt Reynolds that we grew up with in like the movies from the 70s and 80s, he was still very much there.
Yeah.
Burt was sharp and he was switched on, old as heck, But he was still the Burt Reynolds that we grew up with, an absolute legend and a real tragedy. Tell me about your memories of Burt Reynolds.
Deliverance, man. How can you not? Like, one of the greatest, I think his greatest movie of all time. Also, he had that resurgence with Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
And even transcended into
21 years ago now.
Oh my gosh. 21 years ago.
Now
you're making me feel old. but no, and he even transcended into the geek world because, you know, Deadpool did that whole laying on the rug thing, like that Burt Reynolds pose right. And that's that. But he's a legend, and rest in power, Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, for me, it goes back to, the very first Burt Reynolds movie that I can recall seeing at the theaters was Smokey and the Bandit. Mm. And that was one of the first movies to me, too, that sort of kind of broke that fourth wall when he would just look into the camera and smile, and he had that laugh, that very infectious laugh. And through the 70s, though, he you know, there was Smokey and the Bandit. There were movies like Cannonball Run. And then he wanted to direct, and well even before this, Hooper,
yeah.
The movie Hooper, which is, I think, it's such an underrated Burt Reynolds movie. Everybody talks about Deliverance, which is great, a great movie. John Borman, not going to dispute that at all. But there are these other movies that he did, like Hooper, which is such an amazing ode to stunt people, period. Like, if you watch that movie, you come away going, why don't they have their own category at the Oscars, right? And Jan Michael Vincent was in it. It had the Burt Reynolds comedy, Brian Keith. And then he directs this movie, which, again, I adore. I really like it a lot. It's called Sharky's Machine.
Yeah, great movie.
And it's such
often
a good
overlooked.
Overlooked. And it is so good. Brian Keith, he brings along his friends. Charles Durning was another gentleman that he worked with a lot. And yes, movies like Stoker Ace sort of kind of brings him down, and he had that period of stinkos.
But he did.
A lot of people, like, the law of averages catches up with you, but then he's on TV.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Burt Reynolds at the time, you know, you talk about that picture. I read his memoirs, which came out about a year or so ago, right?
Yeah.
He says that was a bad choice. He said it was a really bad decision on his part to do that. But the reason being, he was just having fun.
Sure.
But if you ever watch, and I'm sure a lot of people are Googling and YouTubing, you look up Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show, with Burt Reynolds appearances. And this guy was genuinely funny.
Yeah.
He was and he loved the people around him. He was good friends with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Hence, that's actually what prompted Sharky's Machine. He turned down playing Dirty Harry.
Oh, wow.
And when he was doing Sharky's Machine, Clint Eastwood was like, he's like, hey, Clint. He goes, now I got my Dirty Harry. Mm. So that's what precipitated that. City Heat. And City Heat is actually the movie in which gave him his drug problem.
Right.
A stunt went bad. And that's the other thing. This is a guy that started his career as a stunt person.
Mm.
And he was doing his own stunts in movies before it became a thing.
Yeah, well, he wanted to be a football player originally.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, he wasn't able to pursue that. And so he got into acting, started in TV, and then went into movies. You talk about, you know, him turning down Dirty Harry. There were two other major roles that he turned down.
Yeah. Star Wars.
Star
right?
Wars.
Han Solo.
Turned down Han Solo. And the role in Pretty Woman that went to Richard Gere.
No.
But so, I mean, it just goes to show that even when at that point in his career he wasn't hot, I mean, those, you know, Pretty Woman would have absolutely turned around. I mean, fucking made Richard Gere's career. You know, seriously, he was on the wane, and that turned that around for God knows how long. Not so good now, but, you know, he can't have it all. But yeah, I mean, he only really did the movies that I think he really believed in.
Yeah.
And they didn't always turn out the way. I remember one time my father came home from the video store. Ah, the video store. my father loved movies, but he wouldn't have come home with some shit sometimes. I mean, really, Mac and Me one day he came home with, and he was like, you like E.T.? I was like, yeah, but this isn't E.T.
The reason this is there,
E.T.'s not in the video store. Yeah. It's because it's dog shit. So he came home with Stick one day. Which was just awful.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, because my dad really liked Burt Reynolds, he came home with City Heat. And again, I was like, good God, that was a dull movie. But Boogie Nights, even though that is probably one of his most iconic roles and one of the roles that he was certainly really pleased to get, it wasn't a box office hit. I was talking to Mark Wahlberg about this recently. It's well-loved, but it wasn't a success at the box office.
Right.
And even though it put Burt Reynolds kind of back in people's thoughts, it didn't really boost his box office power. I mean, there were movies that did far more of that and were far less movies. Cop and a Half. Which I love. I mean, yeah, I remember...
I'm a big fan of Carpenter.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
I saw that in the movie theaters so many times. Oh, I love that movie. You know there was a sequel?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, Lou Diamond Phillips in the lead role.
I'm never watching it, but
I know it's there.
I actually worked with Cop and a Half. I was at Universal working in theater marketing when that came out,
love that. I had friends that were going batshit crazy for that movie. They thought it was genius. Seriously, it was so good.
You might be batshit crazy for liking it.
Well, no, it's good. Seriously, I love that. But, you know, movies like Deliverance, Josh Gad, when he went on his first date with his wife, they went to see Deliverance.
This is great first date
movie. Great first date movie. Yeah. Well, I was doing a load of interviews last night for BBC stations around the UK. It was a very long day for me yesterday. And every single time they'd go, oh, Burt Reynolds, blah, 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 blah. You know, Smokey and the Bandit, The Cannonball Run, blah, 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 blah. And then they'd all start playing the Deliverance music. And I'm like, I mean, I know it's out of context, but really? It's like, oh no! That music doesn't exactly bode good times. Nothing ends well with dueling banjos.
Do you guys think that there's an actor nowadays that is kind of like, that has the same career trajectory as Burt Reynolds currently?
I don't know, because his ilk doesn't exist so much anymore. You have to remember how he sort of kind of got into the business as being a stuntman, then starting off on TV.
Yeah.
He and Clint Eastwood, famous story, they got fired on the same day.
Yeah.
Together, and Clint Eastwood's like, well, what are you going to do now? And he goes, I guess I'm going to take some acting lessons. but when you look at, again, the time that Burt Reynolds was around, when you had people like the Rat Pack, right,
sure,
that
he
hung with. And when you look at the cast of things like Cannonball Run, which literally, the movie's got very little plot, but it is just funny.
Yeah.
You just watch
which
it.
Which was
right?
sometimes so, enough.
You know, but then he did movies like Maternity, right?
Yeah.
And The Man Who Loved Women. I mean, he did so many. He would do dramas, romantic comedies.
Gator was another one.
Gator, you know, The Longest Yard.
Yeah.
The original Longest Yard. So he has like this trajectory where, and he was gold.
Yeah.
Like he was not only from a film thing. So when he was on The Tonight Show, ratings would go up. He would sell magazines if ever he was on the cover of magazines. And he was just a delight for people to see. Like, there was a fandom. It doesn't exist kind of today.
And everybody that's worked with him was saying about how supportive he was on cast, especially to the younger members of the cast. You know, he would take time out to sit and talk with them. When he made The Last Movie Star quite recently, I was at the premiere. That's where I met Burt. And the director wrote that movie for it, created the role specifically for him, only wanted Burt to do it. And Burt was massively supportive of the whole project. And even though he was like, yeah, you know, Adam wrote this movie and directed this movie for you, he was very humble about it.
Yeah.
He was a very humble man. He was a wildly talented man. I don't think there's anyone in the industry that can either really replicate his career path or replicate his presence, because he was... Like you say, he was someone that people would tune in. He was appointment viewing, you know? And I think this is because the time of movie stars has changed, because everyone's more accessible now thanks to the internet and stuff like that. We're constantly bombarded with people. We get bored of people. But Burt would come, he'd do a job. He'd do a job because he wanted to do it, not necessarily because it was for money, even when he needed money because he went bankrupt. He was always about, he did things that he wanted to do or he believed in, whether they worked out or not. And we don't have a lot of people like that.
No.
And also with his presence, the fact that men wanted to be him and women wanted to be with him. Some men wanted to be with him too. Let's be inclusive. You know, he was big balls, big heart, and just sex.
Yeah, he had a machismo.
He did.
Him and Playgirl on that rug with the hairy chest and shit. That would turn a guy.
Yeah,
sex.
He had a machismo, definitely. And the other thing, though, is that he had the sense of humor about himself.
Yeah.
Again, it's one of the first times that I remember I went to a movie where they showed outtakes. And the outtakes were everybody as bit funny as just what I saw in the movie.
Yeah.
And I love that there was a continuation of the movie. People also forget, too, he had a fantastic cameo in Mel Brooks' silent movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Right? So he's fantastic in that. A lot of people also don't realize that his life, his career, too, was also plagued by controversy, lies, and, you know, I mean, he was addicted to painkillers, but people like, you know, National Enquirer's, things like that, were reporting that he was suffering from AIDS. This is in the 80s, when he was not. And that helped torpedo his career, and he really couldn't defend himself much because at that point in his career, stunts had really taken a toll on his body. And when you watch the movie Hooper, and I strongly suggest you do, there is a character in there that's just racked in his character of Hooper as well. He's facing a mortality. This is what was happening to Burt Reynolds in real life. And it's sad because he really was. He had a presence that, you know, he could play a cop. He could be a cop and a half.
Yeah.
He could do a comedy. He could do Cannonball.
The full
run.
Title is The Brilliant Cop and a Half. That's the full title. Now we got.
If you say
that's something
so.
You never hear.
That's fake news.
Okay, so lots of people in the chat talking about Burt Reynolds and their relationships with him and his films. And talking of relationships, there aren't many people in Hollywood where, when relationships break down. You know, real relationships, not just work relationships. People still have lots of positive things to say about you. So many of his ex-partners came out yesterday and were like, he was a genuinely nice guy. You know, that's rare. That is rare.
It is. However, you know, I will say this about Sally Field because he wrote about her extensively in his book.
Yeah.
And he says that in his, you know, he says that she was truly the love of his life.
Yeah.
He let her get away. He mistreated her.
Yeah.
He forever apologized, and he did try to get back in touch with her. And at this time, she wasn't returning his calls.
We've got a lot of stuff to get through on the show. I just want to do some stuff from the chat. People talking about on the career path discussion that we were having, a lot of people saying The Rock is the closest to Burt Reynolds.
Interesting.
And I think there are a lot of similarities there. And I think certainly that the relationship that people have with The Rock, where women want to be with him, men want to be him, he's that everyman, he's approachable, he's got that work ethic, but he's also, you know, very sort of normal. You know, he seems like every people. I think that's a good analogy there.
My only thing is The Rock is larger than life.
Yeah.
Where, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you know, he's a Schwarzenegger-ish. And I get it. It's not a bad comparison.
Yeah.
But Burt Reynolds was, when he played a cop, he was fallible.
Yeah.
You know?
Some great tributes coming in yesterday from people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kevin Smith, Edgar Wright, you know, people from Mark Wahlberg, people from various decades in the industry. He touched a lot of people. Do check out The Last Movie Star. I think it's available to stream on Amazon right now.
Okay.
So if you have Amazon Prime, do check it out. It's available, I think, also in non-domestic territories. So do check that out. Adam Rifkin's done a great job with that movie, and it's certainly very fitting. I also want to mention film nerd Jamie saying for all the shit that Reynolds gets for turning down Terms of Endearment, another one that he turned down in Star Wars, keep in mind that he also backed out of doing Zardoz, and for that we are grateful for many reasons, including possibly the worst picture of Sean Connery ever with that ponytail and those tight pants. Senior Nerd saying All Dogs Go to Heaven is my favorite Burt Reynolds film.
There you go.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not sorry to say Deliverance or Boogie Nights or Smoking the Bandit, but I fucking love All Dogs Go to Heaven. I'm a 90s kid, and long may that reign. Seriously, with the actors, there's a lot of people, when I was talking yesterday about loving Cop and a Half, a lot of people going like, what? If you love a film in someone's oeuvre that really touches you in some way, Own it. Never be afraid to love the movies that you love, even if they're fundamentally not great movies.
We all love them. Truer words.
We all have them. If you love them, that's all that matters. People can give it shit until the cows come home. If it matters to you, you own that.
I mean, I tried not to laugh really hard when you told me that Stoker Race was one of your favorite movies of all time.
Okay, moving on. I'm neither going to confirm or deny. Zeno Hour saying, the only actor today who's the closest to the generation, Burt Reynolds, is The Rock. And again, another person there. Lots of people talking about Burt Reynolds. And please, really do. Hooper also featured the great Adam West. That is true. So do please continue the chat in the chat room and also after the show. If you want to continue talking in the comment section, we always encourage that. And do spread the word about the show. A couple of other things this week we should talk about as well. Thank you for your tributes to Burt Reynolds, guys. The Academy Awards has made the decision to postpone that popular film Oscar after the backlash. Did not see this coming.
Right.
Did not see this coming.
What a mistake that they even had this category, I think.
Here's an idea. Just because you think it, Academy, you don't have to say it, plan it, before you announce it. You announced it and had no idea what you were going to do.
Sort of like healthcare.
Who knew it could be so difficult?
No, but I mean, you know, like that's exactly it. Like, you announced something that you had no plan for doing. We talked about, well, what's the plan? We talked about it on this show.
Yeah.
It's on tape. So it's live on tape. I don't understand what the hell they were thinking.
Yeah, there were no guidelines.
No.
They needed to come up with a category. But I have a question. Does this hurt The Black Panther or A Quiet Place? Which I felt like this was kind of created for those movies.
But who knows? I mean, who knows if A Quiet Place... Like, I don't know the guidelines to
this. You're right.
So, I mean, does it hurt? It shouldn't. Again, my biggest thing is there are 10 freaking slots for Best Picture.
I agree.
Yeah.
Fill them all. The rule should be... Fill all 10 slots. Don't give me a year when there's only 7 best pictures. You've got 10 slots. It shouldn't hurt Black Panther and or A Quiet Place for getting nominated.
Mm. Yes.
It shouldn't... I mean,
and I'll be honest with you. I mean, those are both great movies, but I don't know if they're best film of the year. And I think, really, the Oscars are fundamentally about being the best when it comes to the art of cinema.
Yes.
Not popularity, not box office. It really is about the art of filmmaking. I think they're both strong movies. Do I think they're Best Picture nominees? I don't think so, as much as I love both of them.
Have you seen a movie this year that you can consider a Best Picture nominee so far?
Yes, I have. Black Klansman, for me.
Is that like The Wife?
Okay. I didn't see The Wife. Sorry.
No, I heard a lot of good things about The Wife. I mean, only a handful. I'll be really honest with you. Black Klansman is certainly up there. This year, there have been a lot of movies that have been fine for me and good, but there hasn't been many things that is kind of exceptional. I mean, I think the Academy should consider looking at best film, including things like Oscars.
Yeah.
Documentaries, sorry.
Sure.
Some of the best films this year that I've seen have been documentaries, and a number of documentaries have done... Obviously not comparative to Blockbuster, but certainly on spend and yield, the profitability they've done phenomenally well, and they're really, really good. I would rather see, rather than shoehorn in some movies that are good but are not artful cinema, put in some documentaries in there. I mean, the Mr. Rogers one.
Yep.
RBG.
Yeah,
RBG was great. I saw that again this week on CNN.
Right.
Because that was on Labor Day.
Yeah.
Very impressed with that.
Such a good movie.
Just a couple of years ago, I think it was like last year or the year before. Get me Roger Stone. The Trump documentary about Roger Stone was fascinating. Great piece of filmmaking. Yeah. Didn't politically. Dark Money this year is another political documentary. Yeah. It's phenomenal. Probably not Best Picture level, but still phenomenal. I think I would rather see that than a popular... You know, just reflect. Reflect what people are seeing in movie theaters and equate that to the artfulness, and that's how you get your best film. Don't separate them as art and popular.
Well, I agree. And it always... Like, when we got the best animation category, to me, there's no reason why a movie like A Beauty and the Beast at the time, because this is what sort of precipitated a lot of that, was there's no reason why Beauty and the Beast or a movie like it can't be Best Picture. Like a movie like Coco.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
your point, too, it checks the boxes of yeah. artistry and such. However, with like the documentary, I think category this year is going to be tough.
It's very
like,
tough.
Who
this year.
Do you pick? And that's the one that people are going to, or studios are going to have to campaign hard to win that statue.
But I think there are going to be movies that haven't actually come out. And obviously, this is always the case with things like TIFF and Venice, where a couple of movies come up that we weren't even considering, or it was like just figuratively because of who they starred or who they were directed by or the subject matter. But the front runner, you know, most of us have yet to see that. That's getting strong. Bohemian Rhapsody is getting some really strong buzz. A Star is Born could dominate. And that doesn't mean that necessarily, you know, if you open up the 10, that's great. You've got more room for these things. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's better than things like Black Panther.
Sure.
Right.
But I think, you know, if you are then, if you include popularity and what is really getting credit is as great filmmaking, it might not be art. Things like Crazy Rich Asians.
Right.
We don't often have a comedy is nominated as Best Picture.
We're starting to just get into that season of the Oscars, Oscar movies. So, I mean, TIFF is happening, or is going to be happening. So we're going to find out soon enough.
Yeah. Sure. But I think, I mean, I'm really glad that they postponed this. I think they completely jumped the shark on that. Yeah. Because the first question when you announce something, you know this, we do, you know, we ask these questions for a living is, why? How does that work? Right. Explain this to me. And if you put something out there and you simply don't have the answers to the questions, it's not a fully formulated idea.
No, and let's face
it. And it just feels like you're trying to placate the audience, and it does feel like a popularity push.
And there was no good name for it.
No.
Like, that was really a shitty name that demeans, to me, it demeans movies as a whole. It really does. And it's like, now you've become the People's Choice Award.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, come on.
Well, I mean, it was a popularity contest, realistically. That's exactly what this category was meant to be.
Yeah.
But the ironic thing is that so many people at the Academy, they don't watch the movies anyway. No. So when you're voting on a popular movie that's not popular enough for the people who vote on it to watch it,
sadly,
it's kind of like, oh, you're literally just picking the kid that you know is going to be prom queen just because you know she's going to be prom queen.
Yeah, and that was me in like Kickball. Yeah. It was always last one pick.
But I think, I mean, I really think that A Quiet Place, I think movies like Black Panther, I think movies like Crazy Rich Asians.
Mission Impossible.
I love Mission Impossible.
I mean, I think they will still get the kudos, I believe, this year that they deserve in the areas where they most excel when it comes to the art of cinema. And that's not to say that they're not good enough as movies, because they are, but movies are there to fundamentally entertain and inform for the audience, but also get a financial return.
Yeah.
Those are the three main reasons for making a movie.
Simon, I gotta tell you, we're 15 minutes into the show. You've been very insightful today.
I know.
I'm just gonna kudos to you.
That's what happens when I have meth for breakfast. No, I don't. I'm kidding.
Breakfast of champions.
Breakfast of champions. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I don't do meth.
Today.
But a lot of people are actually talking about this in the chat as well. Winners of the Academy Awards should always be based on talent. That's from Westy Kid. Absolutely. That's what separates them from every other popular vote award that is accessible by the public. It's the same with things like Golden Globes and Emmys. You know, those are not publicly chosen things, and there's a reason for that, because this is the industry awards. Westy Kid, I'm sick of people who cannot act winning awards just because they're popular. Absolutely, there are plenty of movies. And also some movies that are entertaining, but the script's not right, or, you know, that the cinematography could be better. I mean, if we're giving away or nominating movies for cinematography, I mean, it certainly wasn't the best movie of the year. It was a good movie, but Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that, the cinematography on that was stunning. That was, like, up there with some of the most epic cinema movies that we've seen in decades.
Yeah.
I mean, but should they get Best Picture nominee?
No
it shouldn't, because it's not the Best Picture. But the art and the craft
and
in that
there
movie?
There are movies that are always like that will get the tech, like the tech credit, whether it's cinematography, whether it's editing, maybe not sound editing.
I mean, Suicide Squad won for best makeup, guys.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and that was ridiculous.
Right?
The only thing that didn't make up was a really good story with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, there are people. I mean, there's Sky Patterson saying, "Hey, Sky, good to have you back in the chat." I think that if the Best Picture category had 12 spots, Roma, A Star Is Born, Boy Erased. You see, Boy Erased has yet to be seen by a wider audience, and I think that's going to do. That's going to hit home. Beale Street. So excited to see Beale Street this year. Black Panther and Halloween are getting a spot. I don't think Black Panther or Halloween will get a spot, neither but I think I. potentially on the others. Don't forget, we've got Melissa McCarthy going serious.
Right. And I hear she's fantastic.
And apparently she is excellent in that. That's what I've heard. Screened, I think, was it Telluride this week? Was it?
Telluride.
And then also there's the Steve Carell movie, which Bob Zemeckis.
Yep.
I mean, I think we should see potentially something awards worthy just from the trailer alone by either Steve or Janelle Monáe.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think let's not forget that.
And Zemeckis,
potentially, I would love to see him nominated for Best Director. That film looks like it's going to be delivered, and we're still months away from that.
I'm excited. I think that we're now that we're finally in this season, we're going to start seeing the cream of the crop rise. And I think Steve Carell, honestly, this is a guy that has been in the Oscar hunt for quite a while now.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to break it. He'll get a nomination this year. But if he wins, I don't know. But I hope he does.
You know, the other thing, though, let's face it. In my dopey, humble opinion, I think we've had a fun year at movies.
Yes.
I think it's been one of the more fun summers to go to the movies this year. And that's what movies are for, right? And you say the cream of the crop is on its way. The way I see it, though, is like, I've already been having a great time. I've been having fun seeing movies the likes of Ready Player One, The Mission Impossibles. I had a good time this summer.
And it's really important for these movies to be out there. But what is more important is for audiences to turn out to see them, which they are. You know, they are really responding to what Hollywood is putting out there right now.
Right.
Because if people don't buy tickets to these movies, you can make the best quality movies in the world. But at the end of the day, it's about business. It's about business, and if they don't get the money back, they're not going to make them anymore.
No.
And then you just get shit that you're paying the same amount of money or possibly more as time marches on, and you're just not being satisfied, and that's a very vicious cycle. So it's great, and it's really important for audiences to really get on board with these things and to be selective, because it's not cheap to go to the movie theaters, so do be selective.
You do say that, and the cost is a big thing regarding movies, but let me tell you something. When you go out and buy a car, right, that car, when they put it together, is worth what?
Yeah.
Right, or a pair of jeans, right? When it costs you $50 to buy a pair of jeans, right, how much does it cost to put it in there and put the Levi's or the Gap thing on there, right? For movies, how much does it cost to make a pair of jeans? $30? $20?
Yeah.
How much does it cost to make a movie and you're only paying 14?
Yeah.
So if it costs $100 million to make a movie, you're not paying compensatory.
I don't know. Have you seen the price of popcorn? No. That shit ain't cheap.
But that's not the movie. But
no,
you're
that's
right.
True. That is true.
So I'm just trying to for something that costs $100 million to make and you're only paying 12 to go see it, that's a deal.
One other film we didn't mention going into awards season, again, got a lot of buzz last week and some controversy, First Man. Damien Chazelle, beautiful, beautiful man, Ryan Gosling. seriously, there aren't many people that you sit in a room, you know this, where you actually get to meet these people and it's like, you look like you do on screen.
Yeah.
There are like a handful of people, men and women, where you sit there and you go, you're in a room with them and I'm like, good God, you're a beautiful human being.
Henry Cavill
is another one. Intoxicating. Halle Berry. I knew she was
Halle
attractive.
Berry is...
First time I got in a room with Halle Berry, I swear I was like a 12-year-old boy again. She is more beautiful and has way more presence than any role she's ever done in a movie by just sitting in a room. Seriously. My wife has never, I mean, obviously Halle Berry wouldn't be able to resist me, but there is only one person in my career that spans 20 plus years where I've come home from work and gone, oh, and that was being in a room with Halle Berry for 5 minutes. I mean, Jesus, she's intoxicating.
Yeah, and see,
stunning woman,
you know,
stunning.
And I don't know. I mean, that's all well and good, but see, I don't have that problem. See, you know, so that's fine. People, you know. They don't recognize
me. Well, we only don't put you in a room with Halle Berry is because she wouldn't be able to resist you,
Dimitri. No, I'm talking
but
about
if she wants,
like, me looking the way I do on screen. Like, when people see me out in the street, they run away.
Look at me. I'm a beast. Don't worry about it.
I'm a beast.
I'm a beast.
No, but you're right about Halle Berry, because I was at Lionsgate for Monsters Ball when she won. And she came in to the office to say, she was very sweet. She thanked everybody.
She's a lovely, lovely woman.
She really is.
Yeah. Also, recently, Jane Fonda.
Sure.
Yeah. Old, but holy crap. Sex appeal by the bag. I mean, she's literally old enough to be my grandmother. Literally. But shit, she's still got
it. You know, and she's another one that's been around. Like that Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's been around, and when you talk about a smart woman... Yeah, she's done a lot.
Ballsy. Okay, we've got a lot of other stuff to get through. Everybody in the chat having a great conversation today along with us, which is great. Edward Sanchez saying, Halle Berry don't never age at all. She doesn't.
No, she honestly doesn't.
And it's not because she has work done. She just looks amazing.
Yeah. Angela Bassett, too.
Oh, my God.
Right?
So good. Yeah. I found out how old she was quite recently. Someone mentioned it in an article, and I was like, are you kidding me?
Right.
I recently watched What's Love Got to Do with It for the first time, I think, since it was in theaters. That movie doesn't get enough love these days.
No.
Her performance in that, I mean, that movie as a whole is so good, but her performance in that is amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Hollywood really hasn't done Angela Bassett justice by any stretch. Okay, a lot to get through. Die Hard 6 title came out this week. We're going to run through a few of these quite quickly. The title has changed to... McClane. The idea behind the movie is still that what they're going to do is it's going to be flashbacks to a young John McClane and then obviously older John McClane. I mean, I don't hate
is
the
it
title.
Die Hard McClane?
I think it's just McClane. Like, just Jack.
It's also
from
a
Will and
sequel
Grace.
And a prequel at the same time.
I mean, they should just call it Die Hard McClane. They've had Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah.
Die Harder. Or, you know, Live Free. Die Hard McClane.
Not excited.
You should have the Die Hard moniker in there. Look, I get people. McClane, I think, is a name or a character that people have grown to know and love, but particularly know. They know the name, but put Die Hard McClane.
Yeah.
Just not excited for this movie. I'm not excited whatsoever for this.
It has to be better than the Mother Russia one. That movie was just...
Oh, what? The Die Hard and
Live
just...
Free. No, not Live Free, Die Hard. It's Good Day to Die... Whatever.
A Good Day to Die Hard.
Which sounds terrible.
Awful.
Terrible.
It was awful. No. It has to be better than that. So, I'm in, only as it being a good apology to that last
movie. I'll see it, probably, for either work or because I'm curious because it's a Die Hard movie. But I just still don't like the idea behind the movie itself.
I don't have the Die Hard nostalgia, so I will see it for work. I'm just not looking forward to it. I think on a recent episode, you said that people are just tired of franchises, and I agree with you, and this happens to be that for me.
I'm not sure people are yet tired of John McClane if he's in something good. I think Bruce Willis throughout his career has earned the goodwill and the respect of an audience. I think people really gravitate to that character when it's a good movie.
Yeah.
I don't know who they're going to cast as the young McClane. I've got nothing against it. I just want it to be good. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that is the fundamental thing that's been missing from the Die Hard movie since Die Hard 3.
Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Live Free or Die Hard, if you see the unrated version, not the PG-13 version that was released theatrically, because why do you go PG-13 on a Die Hard movie? That movie is worthy of the series.
Yeah.
It's just that last movie was so bad.
Is that the Justin Long one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, with Tim Oliphant as the villain.
Yeah.
Again, Tim Oliphant. Hollywood hasn't really given him the roles that he deserves.
So far deserving.
Which is crazy. There's a handful of actors who occasionally see them in something and I'm like, you just don't get... And I can't talk too much about it, but I'll say Boyd Holbrook in The Predator. I'd previously been very indifferent to his work.
Really?
But I loved him in The Predator.
Oh, cool.
But I can't talk about it too much anyway.
Okay.
but yeah, no, I mean, Die Hard 6. I would have just gone Die Hard 6. McClane or John McClane. I just... McClane...
It sounds too much like McClintock.
But you know what? I mean...
You should just Die Hard McClane.
Well, you know that people buying movie tickets, they're not going to go up and go, I want a ticket for McClane.
Right.
People are still, because of the programming and their love of the franchise, right, they're still going to go, the Die Hard movie, yeah, or the new Die Hard, I mean, or Die Hard 6.
It worked for Fast and the Furious, right? Fast 5, sure, yeah, kind of rebranded. I mean, yeah, it totally worked. Totally.
Yeah. Such a shame, but there you go. I mean, I'll make these decisions. But I think it's better than, what was it, Die Hard Year One was the other one? Which sounds like fucking Muppet Babies.
Well, in a vest with a machine gun.
Batman, yeah, yeah.
I didn't like that. No. Bond 25, obviously we know, we discussed this on the show last week. Danny Boyle is now not going to be directing that. The search is on for people who are going to direct, replace him. Two contenders this week added to the list are Bart Layton, who did American Animals, yeah, which I haven't seen, which I heard great things about, and S.J. Clarkson. What a woman? A woman? directing Star Trek 4. But it's a man's thing! Leave it alone! I'm kidding.
Me too.
So two really interesting choices. Did you guys see American Animals?
Yes.
I heard a lot of good things about it.
I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah. You didn't like it?
I didn't see it. Oh, it was a movie pass thing. And
I really enjoyed it. You know, Bart has his kind of... He started off with the documentaries.
Yeah.
He mixed that in American Animals. I actually think that is an outside the box choice.
Yeah.
And I really like it. I think that he would do well. But another director that I kind of like for this too is Matthew Vaughn.
Mm.
Matthew Vaughn would be great. Yeah. I don't understand. I agree, you know, especially with Kingsman and everything. I don't understand why they're not talking about Martin Campbell. We forgot to bring him up. I mean,
yeah,
every time since Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
When they first rebooted him, you brought him in for GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And then they bring him back in Casino Royale. And then I forget if he did Skyfall. I forget who directed Skyfall. I know Deakins was the...
yeah.
I know Deakins did the cinematography. But if this is going to be the last Bond for Daniel Craig,
yeah,
bring in the man who's the money, who knows the character and knows how to direct it. He already has a relationship with Craig. I don't know. It could be age. I don't know. But Martin, I don't understand why we're not hearing Martin Campbell's name. Or maybe he just said, I've had it with Bond. I'm done.
I mean, that could definitely be the case. I mean, I feel like the obvious choice here after seeing Mission Impossible is Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about that too.
And I don't think, I think that he's just burnt out of those style of movies right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure. I agree with you. If you're going to go out, if you're Daniel Craig, you're going to go out, you want to go out on top. Right, you don't want a lackluster, because I think Spectre was a little lackluster.
Yeah,
but I agree. Think that they definitely, somebody like a Matthew Vaughn and Jane Goldman, who he works with a lot,
yeah,
would be a great writer for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think that would be absolutely fantastic. I think they need to bring elements of other projects like the first Kingsman, not the second Kingsman. Yeah. I wasn't a massive fan of that. Elements of things like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and elements of Mission Impossible. They need to find some sort of cocktail that will replicate that. And I think they need to have a slightly different edge, because I think especially when a lot of Bonds try to... they get to the end of their tenure, it's almost like the ideas run out of steam.
Right.
And I'm just like, it needs to have something that is a real edge, a real reason to watch it, aside from the fact that it's a Bond movie and whoever right. directs it. Not so different that they start doing silly things.
Right. Sure.
Because there's nothing worse in a franchise than if you know you're going to be handing over the mantle to someone else, and your last entry, especially off the back of Spectre, again, I was very, very sort of unhappy with that movie.
But its biggest sin is it followed Skyfall. And Skyfall was... Who was
Skyfall
that?
Skyfall was great.
No,
I loved that.
Who directed Skyfall? It wasn't Martin Campbell. It's a name director. He came back for Spectre.
Yeah.
And I can't think of it. Do you have IMDb?
I will IMDb so, that. But Martin Campbell, the last one he directed was Casino Royale. But people are pointing out that he and Daniel Craig actually didn't get on that well. But I think, to be honest with you, I don't think that matters, because Casino Royale was such a strong movie. Sometimes that lack of cohesion, that friction, can actually generate some really, especially with the character James Bond, where you need right. to be detached and slightly jagged, that kind of, hey, we're not best buds thing can actually be a blessing.
Sam Mendes. Did Skyfall and yeah. Spectre, they brought him back for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do enjoy Spectre. I enjoyed Spectre, but it just, Skyfall is such a strong movie. They need to go out on a Bond movie as strong as Skyfall.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need, for me, James Bond, it doesn't need to be Mission Impossible kind of stunts.
Yeah.
They have to be stunts within that scope of the Bond world.
Yeah.
It's not so outlandish that you go, okay, because James Bond's got to be able to carry it off. So he's got to go out strong. You know.
S.J. Clarkson. Isn't she tied up with Star Trek IV? Or is that even going to happen at this point?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Currently tied up with it, but obviously that project is currently on hiatus because of the two Chrises.
Right.
Which is always happens when you double down. Two Chrises. Double bag, never double Chris. Doesn't go well. It's like crossing the streams. We're going to move on from this in just a second. But yeah, I mean, obviously we know now that the Bond thing, the schedule has slightly changed. So it's really going to be a case of availability and seeing what works. I think she would be a very good choice. I really should. People saying in the chat that she doesn't have big budget experience, so directing James Bond would be massive and a game changer.
It's okay.
Barbara B would want that too. But a lot of Bond directors haven't
also
had that.
Ryan Coogler didn't have a big budget experience when he took on Black Panther. And he did quite well for himself.
Yeah,
absolutely. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I want to move on from this.
Catherine Bigelow
is a name that keeps coming up.
If she wants to start getting off of these heavy movies, she could pull it off really, really well.
But also, it's on the Bond thing, but getting off Bond. We found out this week that Rian Johnson is going to direct Daniel Craig in Knives Out, which is a murder mystery, murder thriller, which I think sounds great. Which obviously means that if that's looking to start filming next year, that's going to take Daniel out of the picture for a little while. And those Bond movies, they take a little bit of planning.
They do.
Take a little bit of planning. Yeah. So they need to deconstruct what they've already got in place, because that was due to start shooting soon. And then they need to try and reconstruct something else. We have 10 minutes left on the show. So what we're going to do is go through some very quick news, and then we're going to talk about the week's big releases. So quickly, Denis Villeneuve's Dune looks like he's going to have Rebecca Ferguson for the female lead. She's talking to him about that, opposite Tim Chalamet. Good casting. I just hope we don't burn on Rebecca, because she is often in the running for a lot of things. She is something that's quite rare in the industry, and that talent. I don't want her to burn, but I can't stop watching her. Guys, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's for the role of Lady Jessica, I believe, who was originally played by Francesca Annis. I think she's great. Everything she's in, she is brilliant. I'm excited if this happens. I'm also excited to see that Shining sequel that's possibly she's attached to.
Yep.
And she was great in Mission Impossible. Dr. I love Sleep, Rebecca
Ferguson. I don't think I can burn on her just yet.
Okay.
Just that flame is still awesome.
She was great in the Showman. Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
I still love that movie. I know it gets a lot of shit, but I love it. Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy earning an honorary Oscar this week. Kathleen Kennedy. She's over. She's out. She's leaving. She's not.
No.
She's getting an honorary Oscar. I mean, do you know what? Great, because I don't see in the foreseeable future her getting an Oscar for her work, but I certainly see that this being overdue. I mean, whether you like her or not is beside the point. You cannot fault her work and her legacy in the industry.
That's
what she's being rewarded
for. And that's
for.
The thing that people neglect. I had a conversation with a little cousin of mine who's in Greece, and he was going on about Kathleen Kennedy, how she doesn't care, like the fans and this. And I'm like going, this is a woman who has made so many movies for movie fans that fans have gravitated to throughout her entire career. And I just told him, I used a quote from Last Jedi, and I said, everything you just said, I go, wow, that's amazing, because everything you just said about her is wrong. Because this is a woman who has worked with some of the greats and has worked with some of the biggest fan-driven movies that today are still being watched and considered classics. I agree with you. This honorary Oscar couldn't be going to a better person.
100% agree with you. She's done such great work on so many iconic films that I love.
Yeah.
And she totally deserves this. Yeah. 100%.
If Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 happens, Dave Bautista may not return. He was doing lots of interviews this week for this new action movie he's got coming out. He seems pretty set where he is on this course.
Yeah, I mean, he did say a quote saying that his integrity was more than what it was with than any amount of money out there. And I think that Dave is actually a pretty good actor. At least he was in Blade Runner. I think in Blade Runner, he was amazing.
Yeah. Underused. Massively underused.
Absolutely.
And I think the roles will come his way, and he'll be fine. He'll be just fine.
I'm a big fan of him. I like him as a person. He's a genuinely nice... You've met him a number of times.
Yeah.
Genuinely nice guy. A big fan of Dave Bautista, so I support him on this.
Yeah, I just think that's going to leave a big hole for Guardians.
I mean, will it though? Because
I think it will.
Here's the thing. They're doing a bunch of reshoots on Avengers 4 now. It's not so far-fetched that they could just snap him out and he doesn't come back.
Yeah.
I think the biggest hole is obviously James Gunn not being there. I mean, there's going to have to be a lot of shifting that goes on with Disney and Marvel.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I'm just, you're right. I guess they could just snap him out, which would just suck.
Yeah.
Considering he is a major part of the Guardians of the Galaxy ride, California Adventure. It would bum me out, and I think it would bum a lot of fans out too, because that character and the way he portrays that character, again, it's earned a lot of goodwill.
Absolutely.
And for him not to be there, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
We have 8 minutes left on the show, so we need to talk about this week's big releases.
Sure.
Okay, so box office, Thursday previews. Peppermint and The Nun are the two big ones this week. Peppermint in previews on Thursday took 800,000, which is not great. You really need to, for that, you need to hit that 1 mil to really look like you're going somewhere, looking at a weekend of about 10.5 million. Jennifer Garner needs a hit.
Yeah.
Really quite badly. I didn't get to see this, unfortunately. I know a lot of the activity around the movie has been dumbed down a little bit. I've seen a lot of advertising. I don't feel a lot of buzz from people. Is that what you're getting as well, Joe?
Absolutely. I want this to be good. I want Jennifer Garner to do well, and I want to see this movie. And we were talking off air about this, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of promotion for this movie, though.
No.
That's a huge
mistake. I mean, you said there was a lot of advertising, and I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
I've seen posters all over LA, but I mean, it doesn't appear to be converting into people wanting to get off their asses and buy a ticket, a problem.
And I'm going to say something else that goes within my "you've been very insightful today" theme, and that is, it's a shitty title.
It is a terrible title.
It tells you nothing. No. I mean, like, Peppermint, you don't know that it's like a Death Wish kind of a movie when it's called Peppermint.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
they're standing in front of angels, and I'm like, is this the story of like an Instagrammer?
Right.
What is this? Is this like taking those like selfies and shit?
And I've seen the trailer looks really solid.
Yeah.
Looks like action packed.
But there's nothing to separate it from a load of other movies we've been seeing like that, which is women kicking ass, where it's like title that means nothing, woman kicks ass. It doesn't really give you much beyond that. So what's the sell? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, there doesn't appear to be one, because it's looking like about a 10 million opening weekend.
I'm not sure.
The Nun, though, looks like it is going to own the weekend. It's going to knock Crazy Rich Asians off the top of the box office. Previews, 5.4 million.
Oh, that doesn't suck.
Which does not suck. And 45 million. 40 to 45 million it's looking at the moment for a weekend, which would put it at the top end of box office debuts for anything in the Conjuring universe. Went to the premiere this week, had a chat with Corin. You can read my review up on Forbes. That went up last night. Interesting chat with him, actually. Now, this is a movie that it is not the best entry in the Conjuring universe. It is not the worst entry. I've seen a lot of people saying it is. I would disagree on that with my personal opinion. The biggest problem for me with this, I love the look, I love the feel, I love the way he shot it. We were saying earlier, when from the POV, what Corin's really achieved is you're not just watching a scene. His POV makes you feel like you're also in the room at times, which is very difficult to do, but he achieves it with flawless effortlessness. But it's the fact that there are jump scares and it creates a really good atmosphere. Too often, it doesn't deliver on the scare that it's anticipating to set you up for and to deliver. And sometimes when it does deliver, it delivers so fast visually that it's blink and you miss it. And all the beautiful detail and all the effort he's put in to those scares when the scares come, and there are quite a few of them, They just go, okay, that, I completely missed that. That was just too fast. So that, for me, was the biggest problem with this. Love the cast, love the idea, and I fucking hated the nun in The Conjuring 2. I thought she was a pointless character that was added for no reason. Didn't like the Crooked Man either. But I actually had more fun with this than I was expecting. You also saw this, Joe.
I did. I saw it in Mexico City. They took us to a press.
Wow.
Wow. I got that.
Yeah. Awesome.
And I think that experience really sold me on the movie. But I agree with you 100% about Corin Hardy.
Yep.
His use of the camera and his long shots are brilliant. I think that... He's really good at building tension, but not necessarily paying it off per se. I actually think that trailer was probably more scary than anything in the film.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and that trailer had to be taken down off of YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, it catches you off guard, yeah, but he does do a great job at building tension. I agree with you. This is a middle of the pack Conjuring film. It's better than some, and it's not as good as others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's right in the middle for me. I did like Annabelle 2 a lot.
Oh, Annabelle Creation
was great.
So solid. Yeah.
That's up there. That's just below The Conjuring for me in the universe.
I rank this, and then I would put. I might say I put The Nun right after that.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Yeah. And then for me, it would be Conjuring 2 and then Annabelle right at the bottom. Did not like Annabelle. I mean, I think this is only Corin's second movie. He went from doing The Hollow, which if you haven't seen it, you really should check it out. That's really, really, that really proves that Corin can deliver. I think the difficult thing with this, and we touch on this in the interview I did with him for Forbes, is the fact that when you become something like this, you have a lot of people who work with you.
Right.
They support you. However, you are a piece in a jigsaw. And as much as you are allowed to be creative, and he really did a lot of story development, worked on the scares with James and Gary, who also wrote it. But you are part of something else, and you don't want to overshadow. These are spin-offs.
Yeah, right.
And that is what their role. They're there to fill in the narrative, to fill this out. And I think he does a good job with it.
Mm-hmm.
He might come back. I asked if he would come back and do another one. He would be open to that. And I also asked him about The Crow.
Yeah. See, that's...
I asked him about The Crow. So at the end of my piece on Forbes, I have a little chat with him about that. And it's not... It's not entirely dead.
Oh, good.
It's not entirely dead. It was not a flat no.
I think he was...
I would see that.
He'd be a great director
for
that.
He'd be amazing on
and
that.
I want to see what he would do with that, just camera movements alone with The Crow. I think that he's the perfect director for The Crow. And you could tell, because I talked to him at Comic-Con about this, like kind of off-screen.
Yep.
And he was just so sad that it wasn't happening at the time. He cares.
Yep.
He absolutely cares.
And he knows horror. Ooh. He gets horror. He really does
it. How much time do we have?
We are literally running out. We have about 50. We literally have seconds. We have 90 seconds.
Seconds. Damn, we didn't do Blumhouse
Corner. I know. We'll get to that.
I didn't get to dissect the Halloween trailer. I want horror.
Okay, Halloween trailer.
That Halloween trailer, the second trailer. It's so rare to have a second trailer come out, be stronger than the first, and yet still be a trailer, not give things away. As a Halloween fan, it looks like they're getting everything right. And every reference that they say they're putting in. I mean, Jesus Christ, the first 30 seconds was all Halloween too. I mean, the references are fantastic for the Halloween fan if you want to go nitpicky into the details.
And really interesting bringing that back to The Nun is the fact that The Nun didn't have a full traditional trailer at any point during the ad campaign. And I think that works in its favor.
It does.
I think that works in its favor.
Halloween,
I actually toured the mazes and I spoke to Jason Blum, the king of Blumhouse Corner. And that is going to be going up on Forbes next week. We talk about Halloween. We talk about Halloween Horror Nights. We talk about Blumhouse. We also talk about what we discussed on the show the other week about Blumhouse potentially buying into more franchises.
Oh, yeah.
And also the future of Halloween under Blumhouse. That is going to be worth reading on Monday. Guys, I'm afraid we've run out of time. This has just been another super busy week. So, Joe, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
For coming on the show. This has been really, really good.
Thanks for being here.
I'm going to get you back on again very soon. Certainly within the month. If your schedule allows it. So, Joe, where can we find you?
You can find me on all social media at that hashtag Joe.
Dimitri, thank you for coming back again this week. Always appreciated.
So I'm glad. It's a privilege to be sitting in this chair, to be honest. And at DMovies1701, that's how you can support me on the Twitter.
And you can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter, and This Is Simon Thompson on my Facebook page. Please do check out all my work on Forbes and across various other platforms. Thank you for watching the show. If you like it, tell everybody. We really appreciate it. Without you guys, there is no show. So thank you so much. Follow at follow at Meet Movie Press. I almost got through it without fucking it up, and then I failed. Have a great week. Really appreciate it. Don't forget to check out movies. Support the industry. Tell your friends, and we'll see you next week. Thanks. That was so smooth.
Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.